Welcome to the Experience Focused Leaders Podcast. My name is Alex Shevelenko. I'm CEO and founder of Relate2, and we are on a mission, both with the podcast and with Relate2, to bring the most important ideas to life. And how do we do that? We do that through amazing, immersive, engaging experiences that move your organization forward, move your customers forward, and move us as a society forward. So if you love ideas, if you love bringing these ideas to life, stick around. Also, at the end of the podcast, we'll reveal how you could potentially be a guest speaker on the podcast as well. Let's get started. All right. Part two was Mr. Scott Britton on how are we going to accomplish the impossible, the big hairy audacious goals of entrepreneurs and people who want to make impact in the real world and enjoy the process and enjoy the journey and bring awareness to that journey that normally have been a separate path. So Scott, we could cover it all in 30 minutes. It was too meager for our first session of recording. So I wanted to get your take as once people realize that they want to pursue the combination of those two goals, that's kind of the beginning of the beginning, so to speak. And there is a lot of ups and downs in that journey and habits that and practices that people want to experiment to find the ones that that work for them. You've listed at the end of every chapter in your wonderful book, Conscious Accomplishment, you list a practice and a summary of kind of how to apply some of those ideas in real life, true entrepreneur, bringing things into reality. So let's go over some of these, right? Maybe setting the context on where you would want to start, and you know, make it as real as possible so an audience member could get rolling right after.
Totally. I mean, I think the core essential practice I call using your response to life. And the idea is that anytime we're having a very reactive reaction to something, it's a cue to go inward and explore what is causing that reaction in our consciousness. Right. And so for me, I created this note on my phone and I just started writing down every single time I noticed I was triggered. Like, ideally we would live in a world where, okay, something disturbs you and you could just stop what you're doing and just go into that. And I often do that, but a lot of times you can't, right? You're in the middle of a meeting, you're driving, you're on the phone with somebody. And so when I realized that these were all opportunities to kind of go into my consciousness and to first become aware of what was creating these experiences, mm-hmm. and then also replace that with something that's more aligned to my true nature. I didn't want to waste them. And so I started to write them down. And then I started to basically have a morning practice where, I call it repatterning. There's like a zillion different practices that model this general kind of sequence, which is identify, face, accept, replace. And so, you know, you identify or bring into your awareness and body that experience. You face whatever information comes up as you do that. Okay. You accept that it's there. And then you replace it with something more empowering. And so I'll give you a concrete example of something that happened to me today. All right. I had somebody that I work with, I had them doing a task, and they basically spent the entirety of last week doing it in a very roundabout, inefficient way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just was really frustrated by the results relative to a full week work of effort. And I noticed myself getting triggered. And I actually did have the opportunity to kind of stop what I was doing. And basically, so I'm bringing that situation in And when I went into the experience, what I felt was anger.
Yeah.
Like a lot of anger. And I basically, you know, when I kind of inquired, like, you know, what is this anger coming from? It was because there was a part of me, my consciousness, that felt like it was getting taken advantage of.
Because you were paying someone good money for something that you, like, it was a big investment for you. You felt like they weren't taking that as seriously, or what was?
Yeah. It's less about like the, it's not a logical, like these exercises, they're not like a intellectual thing.
Right. So there's ROI calculation going through your model.
Yeah. It's not
like intuitive, right?
Right. It's intuitive. Right. Exactly. It's like, okay, can I accept that I'm angry? And then I'm asking, like, as I accept that, there's things coming into my awareness. And so this can feel like having a thought, but what's really happening is that there's energy and information that's now being shot. The spotlight of awareness is now allowing you to see. And for me, what was coming into my awareness was this idea of, why are you taking advantage of me?
Mm.
Right. And that was the source of the anger, is because, and so in that moment, the task at hand isn't to be like, well, I'm actually only paying this person X amount of dollars a month. And like, overall, that's still a win because my hourly rate, like, I'm not doing the intellectual thing. It's just like, it's like the core contents are this fear and anger and frustration of being taken advantage of, that probably, actually, I know for a fact, originated from something that happened to me when I was in first grade.
Mm.
And it was specifically like that pattern of being taken advantage of even goes even deeper to hating stupidity, hating incompetence.
Right. Inefficiency, maybe, for some
people. Yeah, because it's like there was something that happened to me where I was in a situation where there was incompetence from myself and others, and then I felt like I was getting taken advantage of, and then I got yelled at, and then it created this whole thing, right, that I've just been carrying around since first grade.
So basically, you're carrying around that somebody's going to judge you and yell at you for not having your shit together. And I think one of the things in the book that you write about, that you, when you understand what's bothering you externally, typically that's something that's internal.
Right.
And so this is this internal story that this unlocks. Okay.
Right. It's like you judge, it's like there's a, as one of the exercises is anytime you judge somebody, anytime you notice you're judging something, you're actually judging yourself. So it's like, I judge incompetence because I judge when I feel incompetent.
Yeah.
I judge stupidity because I judge myself when I feel stupid. And so like, and really what this is about is like, there is probably a deep sense of shame that I felt in that experience back then that just was never fully processed. And so, you know, what's so incredible about this stuff is like, you can have some random thing like a freelancer doing a crappy job that leads you through a golden thread back to like some unprocessed energy that has been in your system for 30 years that is, can now be brought to completion. Yeah. And you can be free of that. And so like, you know, that's the practice. And so like what this demonstrate, what I'm hoping this like example demonstrates is like, there's a time and a place to do like all kinds of these, there's like a zillion meditations and practices you can do that are like consciousness supportive, right? Like, you know, for example, this morning I did a meditation that had to do with mantras. That's like this thing I'm studying, and that's like very specific, like contemplative consciousness work. But the practice, like if that's all you do, you're just missing out on all these opportunities that are
during
constant.
The day.
Exactly. Yeah. Like the whole light, like all of your life, you just have so much stuff that you could just be using.
And that's, yeah, Scott, just to build people on that, you know, to connect it to the to those members of our audience that are kind of trying to connect the dot between the professional and the personal growth, the thing that keeps striking me over and over again is that that same, you know, I could probably put myself in the same category where I was triggered by something that was not done to my quote unquote excellent standard, you know, delivered in shame or whatever in judgment, you know, from years past at work. But then this where it gets really silly is where I go, oh, apply something similar to my kids. Right. Or like, and it's really like, that is, they're on a different journey. Where's my patience? Right. Like, and so I could maybe stop myself, but there was like, could hear the frustration, same frustration boiling up. And so the beauty, I think, of this work is that it is really all encompassing. You start focusing at it at your work and it helps you in your home life. You start focusing, maybe you have relationship challenge with your partner. You start focusing it out there. It helps you there. Maybe you're like being a, you know, a CEO of your kids who are like too young to appreciate that. That was kind of where I kind of realized how silly some of my patterns are. And so you could learn it, but then it really translates across, you know, a full milieu of human relationships that we're building. And I find that part, you know, incredibly powerful. What's been your kind of interconnection of these patterns?
Oh, 100%. I mean, yeah. One pattern cascades through everything. And like these different aspects of our life are almost like interfaces to see that.
Yeah.
And that's my belief, is like kind of what we're here to do. You know, is like is to have these developments and awareness to understand ourselves and grow and recognize more of our true nature. And so for me, I see it all the time where it's like the same thing is showing up across multiple parts of my life, and until I face it, it's going to keep showing up.
All right.
And so when I talk. Because I think something that happens with a lot of people is they're like, I don't have time to do this shit. You know, it's like, I have like...
I have a company to run. I have
a company to run. I have kids. I have to work out. I have all these things. And for me, the way that I relate to it, because I've just seen the movie play on repeat in my life until I take care of it internally.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion of like how reality seems to function based on what I'm seeing. And so I almost think it's like the intelligent thing to do is to take the time to do this work in any part of your life, because otherwise you're just going to be on the same loop.
Yeah.
And I remember there was a, like, I do a handful of coaching clients at a time to help them with this type of stuff. And one great example was this kid that I was working with, young guy, probably like mid late 20s. He was afraid to share music. Like, it was this weird thing. I'm like, you know, he was like afraid to share music. And like, he was really self-conscious about that. And we went into that, and what we discovered was like, he was afraid of being judged. And I'm like, well, okay, that's fascinating. So you're afraid of being judged. And we like felt that. And he's like, well, actually, I'm afraid of being judged at my job. I'm afraid of being judged by my girlfriend. I'm afraid of being judged by my parents. I'm afraid of being judged, you know, by my friends. And we started listing like all these specific examples. And it was like him using this one small little thing of feeling afraid to share music, like was like a huge unlock to him seeing all the ways he's being afraid. The same exact pattern of being afraid to be judged is showing up in all aspects of his life. And so to me, that's another point where it's like, it can seem like a trivial thing to like bring something as small as feeling a hesitancy around sharing music into this practice. Like, really, like, what am I going to learn? It's not that big of a deal,
right.
But actually it's like a thread. These small things can be threads into like huge complexes that are quietly running the show and impacting us.
No, there's no point in judging your choice of Creedence Clearwater Revival circa 70. But so one thing, let's build on this. So judge is generally like the stereotype that we all like have some judging authority that typically judges ourselves. You kind of pointed to that exercise that you bring up, the judging mirror. So when people start, for example, with this, you know, approach is like, here's where I'm judging others. It's triggering me. Let's dig deeper underneath. And then they uncover, wow, like I've been judging myself this whole time. That must feel uncomfortable for many people. It's enlightening, but it sort of all of a sudden realized that you've been running on fear and not being enough and being judged, you know, from by your ancestors or your ancestors' ancestors, as it, you know, turns out. And that's been what's getting you all this great accomplishments and recognition and awards, right? So what happens for people when they are having this aha moment?
I mean, dude, I'm going to cut you straight. Like, it's not easy. You know, this can be like deeply destabilizing. And what I see with a lot of high achievers is once they have this awareness, there's almost like this like period where it's like, shit, I need to like just focus on this.
Right.
And I know that can be like a really like, seem like a bad thing. Like I'm thinking of one of my friends who's like a prolific achiever who's like, wow, like everybody I know has gone in therapy is like less happy, or like, you know, meditation makes you like have mental issues. And like the reality is that you can continue to suffer in ignorance,
right?
You can continue to just go through life and be under control and not know about any of this stuff. Or you can take the bull by the horns and face it, right? And it's going to be uncomfortable. But like, do you want to be free or do you want to suffer in ignorance? Like, do you want to be aware of what's controlling your life or do you want to just like be programmed? And
so it's basically a Matrix moment. It's a Matrix moment.
It's a Matrix moment.
Plato's, you're a Princeton man, so Plato's allegory of the cave moment or whatever you want to go back as your reference. But you're kind of realizing that you've been kind of playing a game that you didn't design, that's been designed for you, and it's gotta be uncomfortable.
I don't know.
Just entertainment. It's real life.
You know? Yeah, and I don't know anybody who's had that moment and is like, oh, it's not a big deal.
Yeah,
like there's a quote that I love that's like, the old paradigm often has to break down for a new one to be constructed. Right. And so like that old paradigm of you and reality and the way you think things are, like that's a demolition job.
Yeah.
You know, when you start to get into this stuff and it's not fun, but on the other side, right? Like there is all this goodness and it's kind of like, hey, it's not fun if you haven't worked out in 2 years to get back on the treadmill or to lift a weight. Like it sucks at first, but it's a little bit easier the next time. It's a little bit easier. And then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, I actually love working out.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how this stuff is too.
Well, in the biblical Old Testament tradition, there is this kind of 40-year period where you're wandering around the desert, kind of having kind of seen the light, part of the light, have seen the power, but are not quite ready to enter the promised land. And that is a very interesting paradigm. But the issue is that a lot of people that we're talking about, right, they're running companies, divisions of big companies, they're movers and shakers. So one of the things that I really like that you describe is this polarity between like, okay, I go a little bit into the learning and then I kind of go back into like real world execution with all the skills that I've learned from the past. And I kind of come back into the kind of more spiritual learning. Was that data? Was the new data? You know, is that one of the ways in which you could balance the two? you know, guide us a little bit on some of the patterns. I have a thought
around this where I don't think that, like, I believe in a higher order intelligence that is like or orchestrating reality. Like, I don't think this is just some random ass thing. And I also don't think that, like, we're just the only thing there is. And what I've seen time and time and again is that when someone goes into that period of immense inner work that often comes with these realizations, they are generally in a circumstance that allows for it, that enables them. And so, like, for me, you know, there was a period straight up where I just, like, wasn't as productive as a executive at my company. Like, that, I just, like, was not as productive for at least a couple years, a year or two, probably.
Because you needed to focus on the, on this.
Yeah. And so, like, I could do what was required of me, but I wasn't pushing the envelope much more. And I just happened to find myself in a position where I had co-founders who understood that and were okay with it. And another example is I had a entrepreneur I know where he basically, like, right before he had his big moment, he, like, started this Chrome app that he could make money. He was making money from, for, like, e-commerce companies. And, you know, it was a pretty, like, kind of like passive minimal work thing. And then he had this big awakening and he kind of just, like, couldn't really do much for, like, a year or two. Right. But, like, he was provided for because he just happened to create this thing right before. And so I've just seen this pattern time and time again. Like, when you're ready to receive the call, like the path has already been laid. Like you will be able to do it and life will work. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. I'm not saying you're going to be just as productive during that time. I'm not saying that it's not going to be, come with its challenges, but, like, you are taken care of. And I do think if people want a more practical answer, that's a little bit less, like, just trust in that. Yeah. I think there is this oscillating motion that you could exercise, right? Where it's like you're bringing in, you're doing the work, you're learning and evolving. You're taking that back into the world. The world's giving you more feedback. You're going back, you're bringing that back inwards, right? And you can kind of continuously titrate that. And over time, you become a really, really a master of that motion of in and out, inward and outward. And, you know, I just think that to me is, like, much more interesting than what I see a lot of people do that have a curiosity around this stuff is, like, they go do, like, a 10-day meditation retreat once a year. And then, like, the rest of their life is, like, looks the same, or, like, they do an ayahuasca retreat or whatever. It's like, then they don't actually ever really change. Like, there's really,
well, I totally, like, feel like I could echo that. I did a Hoffman process, which somebody recommended, you know, we just had a kid and it was, like, interesting transition time. I took some nuggets from it. And some habits that worked, but on the whole, I didn't come back with this sort of transformational experience and, you know, commitment to practice that, you know, in a deliberate, persistent way. So I think it almost takes a mix of some kind of transformational experience and then a set of practices that allow you to build on that versus a one-time event, which is great. It may unblock some stuff. It may, like, open your eyes, right? So, like, nobody's dismissing it. It's just you need a combo.
That's right.
And, you know, some people go do therapy, but they think the therapy solves everything. Whereas I think therapy maybe gives you some awareness, but it doesn't necessarily replace the patterns, right? So a lot of, like, what you're talking about is the, okay, how do we, you know, in an applied way, take our new awareness, you know, and institutionalize it. So it allows me to actually not repeat the same thing over and over again. Right. Cause I think that is also that's probably annoying to people, right? Probably a lot of people give up, right? Like just because they've got this technology and they don't understand how to use it. Like, okay, shake things up and then rebuild a new set of beliefs and then like, you know, build that with a set of practices, right? That's probably a 1-2-3 punch of some sort that, you know, really successful, you know, progress requires. And I think our path tends to be a little bit more meandering if we're not as deliberate about this. Is that your,
Yeah.
is that
I
the
mean,
pattern match that you
I think
see?
there's no way to there this is a meandering walk. Like
Anyway, right.
I
That's by
think
definition, it's
yeah.
meandering. Question
Like
is
I
how
think
long
the
and how far, right?
right and how much unnecessary suffering do you have to go through? And you know, I love that Bible like callback where it's like, yeah, like 40 years in the desert, like I've spent a lot of time in the abyss wondering where this is all going, but one thing I would say is like, you know, I think this path that we're talking about, people aren't meant to go on it alone. It's why we have all of these like traditions and lineages that teach this stuff. It's like you don't just like get the practice and then just like never, historically at least, you don't just like get the practice and then, all right, cool, got it, see you never. It's like you're kind of doing and learning in community. You're doing and learning with a teacher. And so for me, by far and away, the most helpful thing that I've had with this whole how to do this is meeting with a teacher consistently every other week, basically for 6, 7 years at this point. And you know, there's like
And it's the
just
same
to
teacher. It's the same teacher.
I yeah, and I've had multiple teachers, but there is like one person that I would say has been core the whole time. And so I would just suggest that. And you know, there's people that are listening to this that are like, yeah, but like how do I find them and how can I afford it? Like there's people online that teach some of this stuff for free. They will literally give you free meditation classes. Many spiritual teachers are donation based, right? There's
So let's name some of those names so people kind of have them. Like, I think we are fans both of Joe Hodgson and Art of Accomplishment. You have your own community that you're building, so I think this would be a good time to.
Yeah, I mean, I think like you know, there's the kind of like people that are specifically trying to help people integrate the consciousness work into work. And so like Joe Hudson, Art of Accomplishment is great. The Conscious Leadership Group is great at that. You know, I'm trying to do my thing with my book and you know, just making this information available. But then there's like your straight up like Zen Buddhism. And like, there's a guy I know who's incredible, John Bright, Transcendental Meditation. So, like, there's all that works with tech executives. Like, there's all types of like the more traditional contemplative teachers that, you could seek out. And you know, you could just like there's a zillion of them. You just have to like look for them. And
And
I
then
would
the
say,
algorithm, once you start looking, the algorithms will help you. For once, this could be a good thing.
yeah. And I would say, you know, people are like, well, how do you find a teacher? And like what I've seen is like I was never actually looking for the spiritual teacher that I met. I was just basically, I reached a point where I said, this is the most important thing. And I was really committed. And I truly, my life reflected that. Like I was just all in reading, doing things, like I was all in. And I just happened to have a coworker introduce me to someone who ended up becoming my teacher under a completely unrelated guise. And so,
So when the teacher is ready, when the student is ready, the teacher appears, type of
yeah,
perspective.
and I think a lot of people, and it's like kind of like a hackneyed saying, people are like, oh, okay. And a lot of people are like, oh, I'm ready, I'm ready. But like for me, at least what I've seen, because I've seen a lot of people be like, oh, I'm not, like say they're ready. It's really like the level of commitment. It's like how bad do you want it? And I think there's a there is a like an intelligence that seems to operate where it's like, if this is really important to you and your life really reflects that and you've made that demonstration, just watch who shows up in your life.
Well, kind of, I'm very not into serendipity, like historically, but it was sort of to build on your point. It's so funny that you bring this up. There's somebody shared with me a tape between Tara Brach, who you may know is like a great kind of Zen inspired spiritual teacher. And she's interviewing this guy named Stephen Josephs, who is an executive coach who actually taught Tara back in the days about his meditation practice. So I literally have a link to that interview on YouTube that, you know, was sent to me a few years ago. I don't remember listening to it, you know, seeing it. I kind of, it was amongst other things and I ignored it, but it was somebody who like was helping me also, like, you know, in this direction, and I ignored it. And then I rediscovered maybe like 6 months ago, I like somehow came across Tara Brach, just kind of like, I liked her voice, and, you know, I heard something by accident, her interviewing someone. And then I look, go on her YouTube and just see, you know, who did she interview? Cause I like the podcast conversational dialogue format. And it turns out I'm listening to this interview. I really love it. And that's that conversation between Stephen Josephs and Tara Brach from years ago. I didn't realize it, but when I was listening to that conversation, I just heard like the voice, you know, a lot of these folks, and by the way, your voice is amazing and audible. And in this conversation, like there's some melodicity or some rhythm to the voice that just effectively soothes you. And you're kind of almost having like, hey, I like to sound like that, right? I like to be more like this. There's a sound of presence almost. Kind of met Helly moment where like, I want to be a little bit more like that. Like I want to have what he's having. And so I listened to that, and then I kind of reached out to him. And later, like, you know, once we started working, I kind of go through my email and find that I was introduced to his work 3 years ago, right? And I just didn't miss it. So I think that kind of, to me, is a great example that you may round and round, and eventually you kind of end up on the journey. But there needs to be readiness. And we still, I think, to build on your point, people still struggle with consistency, right? So like, so the kind of almost, this is the opposite of discipline, because you're going here exploring, it's a little soft, you don't want to, you know, have a calendar where you kind of hit the check mark on your spiritual work and get into like your ego involved in that you're hitting all your accomplishments there. But there requires to be a discipline to pursue this. How do you balance that? Kind of this, the nature of the conscious that it does, it almost sets you like, hey, you know, chill out.
Yeah. Well, I think there in the beginning, there does need to be a little bit of that. Discipline. Like, I think like if you just like approach this whole desire to like do the inner work is like very loosey goosey, and it's like a totally new thing to your life, I think it's probably going to be pretty hard for it to stick.
It needs to become a habit.
Yeah. And I think it needs to become habit, and there needs to be recognition of the benefit, which comes from consistency. And so but as that journey happens, there is a tendency, especially for a lot of overachievers and high performance people like myself, to basically like, turn this into a mountain to climb. Like, okay, I need to be perfect in my practices. I need to get to enlightenment faster than everyone. Yeah. I need to do more retreats than anybody. Right. And so like, you just need to like watch that, you know, and realize like where that's coming from. And like, are you attached to your practices? Like, can you be okay not doing them?
Right.
Cause that's a point.
Are you still okay? Right. Yeah.
Right, where it's like,
by the way, sorry, I have to leave for my silent retreat now, Scott.
Bye. Yeah, all right, see you, Alex. You're gonna beat me up the Enlightenment Mountain.
Climbing, climbing, climbing.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, so like, I think it's like in an interesting way, your relationship to your growth and your practices is also another mirror. It's just another way your response to life is showing you more about yourself.
So one of the things that I am looking for is role models that exhibit some of this, the journey, or actually are modeling the behaviors that I look up to, right? Like, was my new awareness. And it's funny because a lot of people that come to this work, they kind of start from having all sorts of issues, then realize they have issues, and then they kind of start working, becoming experts in relationships or being more conscious because those issues were blocking them. And so they're not always consistent, right? And then there's a lot of people that are, for lack of a better word, selling something, right? Like, and it's sort of the transactional nature of this jars a little bit, right? If misplaced with the kind of giving nature. And I'm curious, how do you kind of process this, right? Like, how do you find the role models that are kind of really embodying whatever they are working on, that are kind of showing that they can be human, have steps back down, but are still kind of not like they're not transactional about it, or they're authentically inspiring you on a consistent basis.
I mean, I think it's not a super straightforward thing, to be honest. I mean, look, Deepak Chopra just got revealed in the Epstein files saying that God is a construct. Like, he's one of the most revered modern spiritual teachers in our time, and here he is doing that, and who knew that that was a thing? And so, like, for me, like, it's all about personal resonance. Like,
So,
when
on
I
that note, right, like Tony Robbins is probably one of the more well-known kind of achiever gurus, but like also was a spiritual dimension, and he had run into some issues at some point. So what does that tell us, right? Like, that we're like, well, nobody's perfect, we shouldn't look for
Well,
gurus.
what I actually think it tells you is that you are your own guru. That ultimately, there's going to be people and guides along the way that can help you, but at the end of the day, like, you are the teacher, and you are the one responsible for your growth, and life is going to show you your path. And specifically when it comes to finding those guides and teachers, like, there is a felt sense of truth when you encounter someone, like when you listen to someone, when you are, if you're lucky enough to be in their presence, like, it's not really an intellectual thing. It's just like an understanding internally is like, does this feel true? And the other thing I would say is that I like to look at the students of that person, and to say, like, okay, well, where does this lead? And like, there's a lot of traditions I look at, and I see people, and I'm like, I don't want that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to end up like, I'm not impressed by the outcome of of what I'm seeing here. So, those to me are the real two things that I pay attention to when deciding to trust someone or follow a teacher. Recognizing that no one is perfect, and also that, the answers are mostly inside your are inside yourself, and these people are just going to help you get to that.
And I think one of the things that I found very interesting is in a lot of practices, I've seen this pattern where that you kind of you meet your guide. So you have in your head, you have your guide, however it's constructed. And then you almost start getting intuitive where you consult your guide on where you could be going. So it's sort of developing that inner awareness and connection to your guide that's looking out for your better self, which means also for your community and your loved ones, is where kind of the wisdom could be in. But then obviously whatever we're consuming is probably influencing that guide to some degree as well, right? Like, so like what is the perception of that guide, right? It's sort of it is somehow, you know, not created completely on its own, right? There's inputs that go in from all sorts of places in there. So have you, for on your journey, so you had the coach that you were working with on a regular basis, you were reading a lot, anything else that kind of you would share that like helped?
I mean,
you
the practices, the yeah. practices, you know, for me, the reading, the intellectual understanding of this stuff is helpful to a point.
Right. Yeah.
But like, you're not going to read your way to greater understanding of your consciousness, to be honest. It's much more about the inner journeys and the direct experience. And so, yeah, for me, it's just like treating the practice as the, like, treating these practices as like the most important thing I do every day, doing them consistently, meeting with the teacher regularly. I do think there's a lot of benefit to, doing some type of intensive stuff, yeah, like a retreat. Right. You know, I've done a number of retreats where like week long, you're doing nothing but just thinking about this stuff and working on that. And I'd also say being in community of other seekers.
Okay.
You know, it's like the journey is a lot more enriched when you're just not living it by yourself in your head, and you can be around other people and have conversations like this,
yes,
right? That make you feel like, okay, I'm not alone. Okay, there are other perspectives. Okay, yeah, like this is like, this person's going through something similar. Like, I think we were always meant to do this stuff in community, and we just don't really have as much of that in our modern society as probably we once did when consciousness and spirituality were really at the center of culture, and they're not in Western culture right now.
Well, on that note, so I sort of agree with you. And also I think there is, you know, we're two men, right, that are talking about it. I think the male stereotype talks about concrete things, getting shit done, going out there and, you know, bringing the bacon or whatever the life version of that is, protecting, but it doesn't necessarily in the stereotypical like entrepreneur, for example, achiever mindset, like, does not go deep into like, let's go talk about relationships, maybe like in your undergrad philosophy class. And then, you know, unless you have some spiritual traditions, like, and even those sometimes are more regimented, it doesn't happen. So is there anything in particular that you found that's harder, for example, that here to do by gender, harder for people that are sort of on this overachiever track and then trying to relearn the habits?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the hard thing for everybody is like, in my opinion, especially for a high achiever, is like the reassignment of value.
Right.
And benchmarking, where it's like, you know, you could spend your first 2-3 hours of a day just working through something that came up that could be like just really difficult. And like in achiever land, it's like, well, shit, I got the past 3 hours, I've done nothing but just be with this feeling.
Right.
What a waste of time. Like, well, why? Yeah. I wasn't able to get anything done. And like, oh, okay, I've done all this inner work, but I'm making less money this year. Right. And so like, there's a tendency to measure your progress based on the previous dimension, which was purely looking at
external, outside of,
right? Mm-hmm. And so like, I think that's a challenge that everyone has to face, and of like broadening how we assign value to ourselves and to what we're doing and how we measure the progress there. And then I think, like a lot of this stuff we're talking about is about, at least for men, and I can only speak from being a man because I've never been a woman that I know of in this lifetime, is that a lot of this stuff is like going into the more feminine aspects of ourselves, feeling uncertainty, fluidity, Like, and I actually think that's part of what we're being called to do is to have a more balanced integration of all aspects versus being kind of so dominant on one polarity. And so, that's uncomfortable for a lot of guys, and it goes against the archetypes that we've been shown and conditioned. And I do think that the recognition is that it's not a either or, it's a both end, right? Like,
right,
you can be a warrior or a prolific creator and also be extremely loving. Yes. And also be highly emotional and vulnerable. Like, you can do it all, right? And I think that's the new archetype that I want to see more of, and that I think a lot of us, frankly, are just like looking for, like, who out there is doing it? And it's, you know, it's
a little lonely. I think there's like, you need to start looking to discover examples, but I don't, like, to your point, it's not a, once you start opening up a little bit of like what is possible, you sort of start seeing maybe even like movies differently, some works of art differently, some books differently. But there is a lot of things that are broadly entertaining and have the sort of archetypical role models that then you kind of look at it, like you could watch the same TV series or read the same book, and I'm like, oh my God, I could have missed what a, you know, shit show that is of an immoral and other things, like in the hope of, like, in the spirit of entertainment, I almost kind of misunderstood the meaning, or it just appealed to that macho go-getter part of me, but it kind of feels hollow once I have a deeper perspective. And so I am almost finding that I either need to reread some classics in a different way, or when I'm reading it, I could also, it gives me more empathy of where maybe I was in my kind of fallible journey earlier, or other people in my lives where they are in the journey, because that stereotype, or the archetype of an enlightened leader, right? The Marcus Aurelius, for lack of a better word, brought today, it's pretty rare, right? That's why people read that classic, right? It's sort of like Stoicism brought back, and then there's like a big gaping hole the size of an ocean in the pop culture that we're getting.
Well, I think that's part of our charter, right? Is to try to become those type of leaders.
Yeah. So go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just thinking, I just think that's like what a lot of us are on.
So on that journey, so you brought up community and having peers and having, do something that where you create a venue for bringing people together. So you've started your own business that brings, you know, conscious employees with employers effectively. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that, and then like maybe the community that you've built, and how does that, like, what have you learned from that experience?
Yeah, so Conscious Talent is the name of this new company I started, which is effectively a recruiting firm for companies and leaders that care about this stuff. So, you know, when what I observed is that when a founder goes on this journey and they realize how fundamental this stuff is, mm-hmm. and it becomes core to their life, they just want to be around other executives on their team that get it, because it's hard to build a company if you're not all on the same page a certain way. And it becomes like your own little thing that you do in your own world while everybody else, you know, it's hard to integrate the consciousness into the company building and the way it's run. And so we, basically partner with companies and we help them find people that are also on this path that are great, that are very good at what they do. And, you know, that's what we do. And then I think there's also, we have a talent network where, leaders who are interested in finding their next opportunity and they want to just know about companies that are hiring, like we have a form on our website where basically you can fill it out and just kind of gets you on our radar. And when we have aligned opportunities, we can let you know about it. So that's that business. And I think what I've learned is like, this is still really niche. Right. You know, it's like, this is still like something that is not the biggest priority for a lot of leaders. And I think the biggest priority for a lot of leaders is like, how do we like make our company AI first, right? Things like that. And they're not like, well, how do I build a conscious team? And it just doesn't seem like a hair on fire problem in the same way that probably doing the inner work doesn't seem like a hair on fire problem for most entrepreneurs, right? It's like more of like a slow burn that you just don't know how important it is until you do.
And yeah, it's almost like you have a crisis and then all of a sudden, or you're about to die, unfortunately, like, you know, like that's sadly like for a lot of us, it's kind of the moment where like, oh wait, all that stuff has been meaningless, right? And that's kind of that there's a lot of literature on that. I love Tolstoy's Death of Ivan Ilyich in particular, which ironically was taught at Stanford even as an example, but it was not a mainstream thing that just feels like it's you know, everybody's moving towards. But on the other side, like I've seen McKinsey is starting to do like books on you know, more centered leadership. And so they're using slightly different words, maybe not the word conscious as much. Right. But I think fundamentally there is a movement. It's put in the little mumbo jumbo that's like businessy, but some of the exercises are similar. Right. And so I'm wondering if you've seen, so there's not a major dominance, but do you see like the level, for example, of FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt generated by AI on a daily basis that's like basically kept some founders in the fear mode for the last 2.5 years or 3 years, eventually probably leads people to say, screw it. Like, I'm just going to focus on the fundamentals. I'm going to, like, this thing is changing so fast that if I react all the time, it's not going to be sustainable as fun as it is. And I just need to recenter. Do you see like something happening going forward?
Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, this is definitely where the world's going, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So this is where we're going, and you know, you just see more and more founders and leaders getting on this path. And that's ultimately the leading indicator, is like people making this part of their individual journey. That's the first step for this to start to bring this into company building and the way that they build a business. So
it starts as an individual leader.
Yeah, exactly.
Or an individual manager at least, right? And then it expands. It's not going to be like society is like still very materialistically set. And that is just maybe outside of educational system, there's not a lot of room to bring in this with a lot of the work that you're doing. It just happens more with life teaching people lessons. Is that kind of the trajectory?
Yeah, I don't think that like McKinsey writing an article on spiritual intelligence is going to be like what moves the domino. I think there's just culturally more people realizing that there's more to the story than what they've been told. And that just is like a slow snowball.
So on that journey of that snowball, you built a community of founders. Tell us more about that.
I did. I built a community called Founder Satsang. It's not advertised anywhere. I don't really talk about it. Basically, it's what I wanted when I got on this journey and didn't have, which is I want to be around people that are walking both these paths at the same time. And so, you know, we've done 4 retreats, in-person retreats, a lot of the community gathers in different regions like the Bay Area or New York or Austin in person. And then there's a lot of digital activity as well. And I think the ethos is it's a sincere group of people that are trying to collectively understand together, like, how do I do both at the same time? How do I continue to deepen my experience on the consciousness journey and also create more beauty in the world? And, you know, I think having that type of container where people understand what it's like to be a founder and try to do both, which is quite unique, has created a lot of value for a lot of people.
And do you feel like this is the path? So there is going to be something similar for, you know, healthcare practitioners and something similar for other fields, like maybe artists already need to connect to their muse.
I don't know. You know, I don't know. Like, I don't know, like, I don't know if, like, if I'm a nurse, right? Or like I'm a DJ, if I feel like such a strong identification with, like, I want to go do this with other nurses.
Right.
I definitely do think there's something about being an entrepreneur that's like,
because you feel lonelier.
Want to be around people that get me, and like what I'm doing is like pretty distinct.
Right.
And so I'm not sure if that's the path forward. I mean, it hasn't been the path in the past. I think in the past it's been more organized around a particular teacher or teaching. And then that's how people congregate. It's like, we're all going to go, you know, learn Zen, or we're going to go learn, you know, Tibetan Buddhism or whatever. And then that's the organizing principle.
Well, Scott, my view is that I am a huge endorser of what you've been working on, because I've definitely felt that there is a gap, and you've started filling that out with your book, and which I, you know, hope everybody finds on you know, paper copy, Kindle or Audible is great, read by Scott himself. There is this community where if you do open it up, you know, I think a lot of entrepreneurs that are listening to this, that are feeling the call, may be interested in joining forces. Your conscious, you know, talent search firm. And I think the underlying feeling for me was, when I saw your book and saw the title and saw where you were going, was this, I was like, where were you a few months ago, Scott? Right? Like, cause it's sort of, and we felt like when we chatted, we were like comparing notes and people that kind of influence us on the journey. I would say you're further along, but it's still like, you could start comparing notes and feeling that it is not a, there needs to be more of a collaboration and co-creation, if possible, around this in the founder and startup community and the broader world. So I salute your work. Thank you for sharing and feeling the calling and inspiring folks like myself in our own journeys.
Thank you, Alex. It's a real honor for me to be on your show, and I love everything you're doing, and I'm just excited that we're friends now. We're connected now. And, you know, the journey is just beginning in our own friendship.
Yeah. And thank you. And so one thing, some of the audience here are related to AI customers. And one of the easiest way to think about why Scott is here, if you're related to AI customer and not a founder, is that basically we're creating conscious conversations between an author and the audience at Relate to AI. We're giving a choice of where to take the conversations. It's a real dialogue. It's not a monologue where I'm just throwing up whatever I've thought, however brilliant it is. It's, you know, it creates room for different learners, different interactions, different media preferences, and different journeys that you end up taking to get to your answer. It's not a prescriptive follow my religion, you know, of content, right? And so oftentimes the more important the idea, the less consciously it's presented, or it's only presented from the view of the creator and not as a conversation. And I think, Scott, what you're doing is, you know, instigating all sorts of brilliant conversations, right, between individuals, teams, companies, their missions. And so if you want to be inspired by, you know, how to create a conscious product around your ideas, you know, the what we're getting inspired at Relate to AI is by thought leaders and operators like Scott, right, that are basically translating wisdom, experience into ideas that move you towards behavioral change, that move you to enlightenment. And imagine if your customers, your audience are getting enlightened versus just, you know, dropped a bunch of information on their heads in the age of information overload. So that's sort of one of the reasons why it's worth checking this out. And because that's the sort of spirit of consciousness is certainly how we want to build Relate to AI as a vehicle for getting important ideas and conversations across. So check out Scott's book. Scott, where can last prompt, where can people find you and your work?
Connect. So my website, scottbritton.me, has links to everything. LinkedIn is probably the place that I'm most active on social media. I'm also on X if people are on there, Substack. And yeah, just Google around. I'm on the internet.
Amazing. Thank you, Scott, for joining us.
Thanks, Alex.
Welcome back. Alex Shevelenko here. Thank you so much for listening to Experience Focused Leaders podcast. You can learn more about us at podcast.relateto.com, R-E-L-Y-T-O.com. Obviously, we would love for you to send this to people that you know who would be great speakers, or just share the nuggets that you took away from this episode with your community on social. And you could learn more about what we're up to on relateto.com. You could certainly connect with me on LinkedIn, where it's just very easy to spell my name. You have to have a master's in Ukrainian. It's Shevelenko, Shevelenko. Would love to connect so that we can move together the way the world communicates about its most important ideas. Thank you for listening. We hope to see you next time.